The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Oil was down to, gasoline was down at numbers that people hadn't seen in years. $1.85, $1.95. So it passed $2. I was in Iowa at a stop, and we had $1.95, another one, $1.85 a gallon. And we'll see those days pretty soon again, based on everything I see, as soon as the war ends. And I think it's going to end pretty soon. I don't think they can go much longer. Yeah, please.
Has a deal been reached to reopen the Strait of Hormuz?
Well, I don't want to say it has been. It's sort of open right now. You know, we have a thing called the blockade headed up by the U.S. Navy, and we control it. And now we control it, but they can always shoot something. They always have something, or drop a mine. And if you have one mine sitting out there, you sort of mess things up because people don't want to take their billion-dollar boats and accidentally get hit by a mine. But I think we're doing very well. I just, you know, I'm involved in the negotiation. I think we're doing fine. It could be soon, yeah.
Iran says it's in the final stages of drafting an agreement with Oman on shipping routes through the Strait of Hormuz. The two countries are on opposite sides of the narrow waterway, which carries a fifth of the world's oil and gas supply. Reports suggest that under the agreement, Tehran would have control over ships entering the Gulf through the strait, while Oman would oversee outbound shipping. If the deal goes through, it would signal a major shift in the balance of regional power in Tehran's favor.
Now, we continue to follow all the details because President Trump still says that a deal with Iran to reopen the strait could be reached very soon as this week. Iran's parliament speaker, though, continues to mock Trump on social media. Mohammed Bagher Ghalibaf posted on X, quote, "Massive attack coming. Wait, never mind. They want to negotiate. That's theater diplomacy on loop, using bullying and broken promises and fake news as leverage is a failed strategy. Acknowledge the facts and fulfill your commitments. We don't need more theater."
The German chancellor and his governing coalition seem to be in trouble again.
There's been so much trouble surrounding this coalition ever since it started. Is this what we're seeing right now, business as usual, you know, or is it really a danger to the governing coalition and the chancellor?
It's not business as usual. If he doesn't manage to make headway on this reform, if this pension reform, which is actually one for the history books, the compromise in itself is one for the history books. If that unravels, he will lose yet more credibility, particularly at a moment where Friedrich Merz, pretty much from day one, has defined the floor of public popularity ratings that we've so far seen in Germany. He started a lot lower than both of his predecessors, and he kept going even lower. So he really needs a win. He badly needs a win to avoid another big entry into the German history books, and that would be the far-right Alternative for Germany actually coming to power anywhere in Germany in the first state.
On munitions, you posted overnight that the U.S. has a massive amount.
And right.
You denied that there were any shortages. There is a supplemental request for $21 billion to restock. So why is that request still there? If there's
because we need more all the time. I mean, we need more. Look, we gave tremendous amount to Ukraine. The Biden people did. And they were given free of charge. No charge. No charge. Billions, hundreds of billions of dollars. And fortunately, I built up so much during my term. I rebuilt the military and also loaded it up with a lot of stuff. And we have certain types of munitions that are very powerful, that we have virtual unlimited supply. We have others where it's a little bit tighter, and we're getting them in on a daily basis. As you know, our defense companies are building more plants right now than at any point in history. They're building plants for the Patriots, for the Tomahawks, for everything. But we have certain types of munitions, which are very, they may not be as accurate. They may not be, you know, they're not as elite. We have Elite 2, but we're We're watching that very closely. But we have certain types which are very powerful and very good, and we have an unlimited supply, and so we're in great shape. But with that being said, we always want more. We have to have more. We have other things maybe come up. Maybe come up and maybe don't come up. Hopefully nothing else does come up. But we're in very good shape. We have literally massive amounts of ammunition.
As the present evil world turns, the war is just about over. We're very near an eternal peace deal. You've got the Strait of Hormuz. It's sort of open. And then Iran and Oman working, not even behind the scenes, but without American intervention or input. Where Iran controls the strait as ships come in, and Oman controls the strait as they leave. Meanwhile, there's a leadership crisis in Germany. Lots of disgruntled citizens in Germany. They're in the heart of Europe. And with respect to U.S. military firepower, there's a shortage in munitions, or maybe there's an unlimited supply. It's hard to tell. It depends on who you're listening to. Well, today you're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, the last show of the week. It's hard to believe. It's been a fast-moving week, and it's about to move even faster for those of us here on this campus as we start in on orientation for Armstrong College on Monday, and then we're in full swing with classes after that, and then trying to keep up with this program as well. I'm not sure how it looks on your end, but we've got new brilliant lighting in the studio, so hopefully it makes the program that much more enjoyable to watch. I'm sure there's going to be a few things to sort out, but that said, we had the old system for probably a couple decades, so it's nice to upgrade some of the equipment in the studio. We do use it a lot, as you well know. Speaking of college, we just finished the summer educational program last weekend. We got this nice email from one of you viewers. The SEP program is truly awesome. It's a true blessing to see kids and adults working together in the different sporting events and participating in learning the basic skills of life. I look forward to the day when the whole world can enjoy this way of life. Thanks for all the hard work done to make it possible. One thing about SEP is, and the director this year, Joel Hilliker, he commented after the fact that he thought that this particular camp had fewer problems or issues or difficulties. There's always challenges. The young people have to push themselves. God meant for us to do that. It's the straight and narrow way. And of course, when you're out playing sports in the hot summer sun, that can be a difficult challenge as well. Sometimes there's a few injuries or nagging injuries that slow people down. But as far as the overall program and the impact that it has on young people and older people alike, it's a great learning opportunity for our college students as they work at camp to serve the teenagers. But one thing about the whole program is their stability, their strength. It's based on God's law. Every day starts with a forum where we take the students through the Holy Bible. This year, the theme was Prove God. Prove God. There are verses in the Bible where saints of God were asking, where is God? We've got to find God. We've got to look for God. God is the solution. God has the answers. We don't want to shut God out. God has to be at the center. Psalm 127 and verse 1, I mentioned it earlier this week. Unless the Lord builds the house, the laborers are just going to carry on in vain. Nothing is going to come from it. Or you're just going to get caught up in this endless cycle. This endless sin cycle. That's what we refer to it as in our class, Old Testament survey. Because you see ancient Israel just going through that cycle again and again and again. curses descend upon them once they disobey and turn from God, and then they repent, they listen to God's prophet or servant, they get back on track, and then the blessings return. And then a generation or two later, sure enough, there they are descending into the depths of sin and perversion. We, in our news gathering, we call it Groundhog Day, at least with respect to Iran. The endless negotiations, the endless fighting and bombing, the on and off again, ceasefire now, no ceasefire, bombing resumes, back to the peace negotiations. The war's about over. The straits, oh, it's kind of open. And on it's gone for 6 months. This is what you call instability. This is not a world that is stable and secure and founded on a rock like our youth camps are, like our college program is. Jesus said in the Gospels, you better be founded on a rock of stability, an immovable foundation, or else as soon as the first storm comes along, everything's going to be wiped out. Everything's going to be demolished. Psalm 82 and verse 5. Look at this psalm. It says, they know not, neither will they understand. They walk on in darkness. All the foundations of the earth are out of course. How you've walked in darkness, we all have. Getting up in the middle of the night, stubbing your toe, walking slowly. You're just so unsure about the way forward until your eyes adjust or until you can switch on the light. What would it be like if you know, the foundation, what if the studio on its foundation was always moving and unstable? I'd be rocking all over the place. That's the way this world is, spiritually speaking. And yet we continue on talking about how great this world is, how secure we are, how much peace there is, how much prosperity there is. Is there? God says that the whole earth, it's out of course. The foundations of this earth are out of course. That's the truth. A foundation is something that should be immovable. And God speaks of this in the Holy Scriptures. He talks about Bible prophecy, for example, being a sure foundation. You can bank on it. You can stake your life on it. Hebrews 6 talks about God not lying. And you can anchor your soul to that. If God says it, it is sure. He's not going to waver. He's not going to be tossed to and fro with every wind of doctrine, like it says in Ephesians 4:14. Are you on a solid foundation? Look at this world. You see it every day almost now in the cold opens. You see instability. You see that we're unable to get anything done. Or if we do, it comes undone just a short while after. What would be the course to stability with respect to Iran, the number one state sponsor of terrorism? God's already out of the picture. God's not building the house. But if you leave God out of it, you better have, with a regime like that that's mocking us, they're mocking America because of the back and forth, because of being tossed to and fro, because of what we've been talking about on this program. Well, without God, the only stable course that you could take is a sustained effort to bring the regime to its knees using all forces available, as we covered the other day. Not just firepower from afar, but bringing the regime to its knees, using the force of those long-distance missiles, using a bombing campaign, using a ground invasion. If that were going on for the past 6 months, now that would be spending a lot of strength, for sure. I'm just giving you a hypothetical. But if that went on for 3 months, what would the situation be like right now in Iran? It probably would have been over by you know, late March or mid-April. They're no match for the United States of America. But because of what I talked about on Wednesday, they are a match. And they seem to have more leverage. It's unbelievable. They're negotiating with Oman over the strait. And then President Trump, for his part, says yesterday, it's kind of open. Who's running the show here? How is the great American superpower left out of negotiations over that strait? And as I've said previously, the whole world is watching. Germany's watching. They're learning. They are learning how to defeat the King of the South. It's going to take a whirlwind. It's going to take all hands on deck. A whirlwind of firepower. A sustained effort. You'll notice in Daniel 11:40, it doesn't say a whirlwind for 10 days and then peace negotiations for 5 and then ceasefire over, back to bombing, and then back to the negotiating table, send over the diplomats. Doesn't say that, does it? We see what's coming because Bible prophecy informs us. What a blessing that sure foundation is. Continuing in this psalm, it says in Psalm 82, now verse 6, I have said you are gods and all of your children, and all of you are children, I should say, of the Most High. Only, you see, there's only stability in God, His family, and what God is building. And really and truly, if you travel through the camp, as I did for 3 weeks, coming to the studio, going back to my home, going back to the office, you see stability. You see peace. You see happiness. You see unity. You see God's law. You see the Holy Bible. You see God's government. You don't see those things in the world today. You just don't. In Politico, Hormuz deal with Oman in final stages, says Iran. Negotiations between the two, delineating a shipping route through the strait, have reached the final stage. The shipping lane would primarily lie within Iranian territorial waters, with parts extending into Omani waters. Is that the formula for stability in the Middle East or in that Gulf? What does it say about American power when you have Iran and little tiny Oman settling the crisis at the Strait of Hormuz? What a miscalculation on the part of America to not know, going in, just how critical this strategic seagate would be. To be unprepared for it. The rest of the world, as I say, is watching. Listen to this from Fox, clip 4.
And there's a huge difference between the U.S., Iran, and Oman declaring that the strait is open and the strait actually being realistically opened. I'm looking at the image you have up right now. You see all those ships, hundreds of ships, on the north side of the strait there, unable to head back south and get out with their cargo. And that's because the insurance companies. So even though countries may proclaim the strait is open, the insurance companies are holding their own ships back because of the cost, because of the risk. And until they're comfortable saying the strait is open and the reality of the strait being open really are two different things.
He's saying that there's two different things to take note of here. The great proclamations, the great declarations on the one hand, and then on the other hand, what's actually happening? Here are these ships. They're still bunching up because they're afraid. They don't want to lose their cargo. They don't want to lose the ship. The insurance companies are going crazy. A crucial sea gate, 20% of the world's oil flowing through it, and controlled by, at least to this point, Iran and Oman. There you go. Here's one more from Fox, clip 5.
Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. The White House is not going to allow them to have that. nuclear weapon, but that's not imminent. That's not going to happen over the next short time period. But getting that strait open, getting that oil flowing, 20% of the world's oil, a lot of it heading to Asia, that is very, very short term and needs to be resolved right away. You can clearly see how that has become the priority. That, as well as keeping this war minimal, the risk, you're talking right there about the Houthis' attack on Saudi Arabia, the risk of this war spreading regionally and, you know, beyond is very, very high, just like a matchstick. Somebody lights us off if one of these attacks goes awry, and real problem.
Reuters also reporting now that officials from Turkey and Pakistan are in Saudi Arabia so the three countries can sign a joint defense agreement.
There you go. Psalm 83 coming into full effect almost. Saudi Arabia, Turkey, even Pakistan. They're going to be aligned, at least Saudi Arabia and Turkey. They're going to be aligned with Germany in that Psalm 83 alliance. And then before that last comment, he talks about the threat of escalation, how that it's just going to take a little lit match to set things aflame. This article from the New York Times, the Yemeni military said on Thursday that the Houthis, an Iran-backed militia, had attacked the armed forces of the country's internationally recognized government, an escalation that threatened to reignite Yemen's long simmering civil war. And then, as I think it was alluded to there in that clip, there's also an attack in Saudi Arabia from the Houthis. So here again, it's a world of instability. We're entering into perilous times. In fact, we're in them. We're in perilous times. An escalation of civil war in Yemen, right there in the region. It says here the fighting on Thursday wasn't just in Yemen. A Saudi-led military coalition backing Yemen's official government blamed a separate shelling attack in Saudi territory on the Houthis, saying 11 civilians had been injured. Meanwhile, it says, this is at the Washington Post, Trump, Hegseth clashed at Camp David over Iran missile depletion concerns. President Trump was angry with Hegseth. He wasn't informed about the depletion of munitions. Hegseth, for his part, he blamed it on his assistant. It says in the piece, it says here, he demanded answers from Hegseth on why he had apparently been misled on extreme munitions shortages. So now the White House, for its part, will say these are lies. This is fake news. The Washington Post and the New York Times has it in for us, and that's true. I mean, there's no doubt about that. We've talked about that for years. But on the other hand, like I said the other day, if you're burning through all kinds of munitions, obviously, there are no unlimited supplies. Like we covered the other day, those are bombs that have to be built and constructed. It'd be nice if we had an unlimited supply. Every year on the 4th of July, I wish I had an unlimited supply of fireworks. It's amazing how quickly you can burn through these fireworks that cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and you set them off and they're done in like 8 minutes. Everything explodes and everybody had a good time, but you think, wow, well, if only that could be 45 minutes. If only we had the funds to do it for 45 minutes. That's why a lot of people go to these big displays sponsored by big companies, corporations, or universities. It takes money. It takes production. It costs a lot. Some of these missiles are millions of dollars each. Any way you look at this, whether the supplies are near the bottom or in the middle somewhere, the cost, the heavy cost, the fact that we're spending the strength in vain because you get 6 months into it and Iran has the upper hand. How is this possible? It's because of Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, as we covered the other day. It's because we've lost the pride in our power. It's because we're coming under an avalanche of curses. That's the truth. People don't want to say it. They don't want to believe it. They won't accept it. But that's what's happening. Just compare the way that this war is being carried out to any other war in America's history, from World War II to anything before that. Just compare the difference. We've never seen a war fought quite like this. On again, off again, on again, off again, on again, off again. Diplomats, diplomats. They can't be worked with. They can't be reasoned with. Bomb them. Turn their nation into a parking lot. Just wipe out the whole thing. We've never seen America fight a war quite like this. The White House on these reports that munitions are extremely low. The Post says, this is 100% fake news. This is quoting the White House press secretary. Literally never happened. President Trump has the utmost confidence in Secretary Hegseth. And again, the Washington Post has it in for Hegseth. They would love to they would love to create this divide between President Trump and Hegseth to get Hegseth out of the equation. And so here comes the White House press secretary. She's defending Hegseth. So what's the truth? What are the facts on the ground? Well, we may not know all of the specifics, but suffice it to say, the world is unstable. The Wall Street Journal says this, President Trump orders leak probe after venting about media coverage of munitions stockpile. That's a touchy subject with him. He doesn't like it when the Post talks about America running out of missiles, long-range missiles. So now he wants to go after the leakers. It's a shame he didn't go after some of the leakers that almost destroyed his first term in office. Comey and company, all those people. But when it's this, just criticizing the military for not planning in advance or being caught off guard, not having enough now that's serious. Comey carrying out treasonous activity. He can get away with that. I'll call him out, but that'll be the end of it. It's kind of like the Fauci thing. We'll call him out. You know, we'll send the referral to the DOJ. We'll make him sweat a little bit. But in the end, is Congress going to do anything? Is the DOJ going to do anything? Prove me wrong. I'd like to see them do it. For someone that caused so much suffering, that imposed his will in many ways on the world, but certainly on America, but not held to account. Never accountability, except when it comes to critics. I guess that's a more serious crime, criticizing, than treason. And don't get me wrong, if you're leaking, there should be punishment. But how about holding treasonous actors, traitors, to account? Maybe we should start there and then work our way down. That's my humble suggestion. Start with treason, and then we can go down from there. Trump made the demand after weeks of media headlines describing depleted munitions levels associated with the war, according to the administration officials, despite administration assurances that the U.S. has what it needs to fight Tehran. I mean, we've got an unlimited supply. We've got everything we need. And we also need a leak probe. And I'm also upset with Hegseth. Well, maybe the press secretary says that didn't happen. That's fake news. A world of instability. Here's that story that you heard about in one of the clips. In the Times of Israel, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Pakistan signed joint defense deal in shadow of Iran war. We have in our King of the South booklet, I don't think it's up here, but you can order your free copy at our website, thetrumpet.com, or there's probably a link to that in this video. It says in the book, you can see what a unique alliance is prophesied here in Psalm 83, a collection of Middle Eastern Islamic peoples, along with the Turks, and all the way from Europe, the Germans. What a unique alliance. And one of the things my father brings out in the booklet is that you've never seen this in history. So, okay, is God's word sure? Is it a sure foundation that you can stand on? Is it stable? Is he going to back his word, his promise, his prophecies? Well, it's something to consider. Selah. Ponder this. Think on this. As you see this alliance forming, just remember. Just remember where you heard it discussed or where you read about it in this little booklet there. The King of the South. Monumental prophecies unfolding before our eyes. And you can add this little tidbit to it. What unites the members of the Psalm 83 Alliance? It's revealed in Psalm 83, 4 and verse 5, or 4 and 5. They said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. My father says, this clearly states that the destructive purpose for which this confederation comes together, it's to utterly destroy Israel. That's what we're facing, destruction. It's like Mr. Armstrong said in U.S. and Britain, the higher up we go in power, prosperity, and strength, the harder the fall when we forsake God. There's a verse in Jeremiah 2, I read it this morning. It says, you forsook God after he had been leading you. He had been directing you. God was leading the operation. God was building the house. God was at the center. Why did you forsake him? Why did you walk away from him? Why did you disobey him? Why did you rebel? God says to his people, excuse the diversion, he says, no other nation turns to other gods. Look at this world and all of its pagan religions. They don't wake up one day and say, you know what? I don't agree with Buddha. And we're gonna go with another god. But what about Islam? Look at them. Look at how faithful they are to their religion. I know there's variations and strains of it, mutations and whatever else, but for the most part, you know, Allah reigns supreme. And then you come to God's church in the final era, the last church era. And what did God's people do? They rejected. God says, by the way, about these other religions, they aren't even the true gods. They're just made from material things of this earth. And in the case of God's people, they forsook the true God and embraced the man-made gods of this world. How do you explain this? How does this happen? It happens because the God, small g, of this world is Satan the devil. And he hates God. And he hates God's purpose. He hates God's plan. He hates that God's reproducing himself. He hates that he's recreating other God beings. He's building a family. He's building a house. And Satan does everything that he can to destroy what God builds, to make sure that we're just operating on a shaky foundation, that there's just a constant earthquake, spiritually speaking. It's always moving underneath us. We're always walking in the dark. We're groping in the dark, as it says in Isaiah 59. A world of instability. That's what we see. And that's what is prophesied. Lee Smith, great article by Lee Smith. The president of peace, he says. Let's see what he has to say. It was going to be the biggest military attack since World War II, said President Trump of the joint military operation with Israel that he called off Saturday night. He said that he didn't do it because he was asked not to by Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, Turkey, Pakistan. These are the ones that are, I guess you could say, dictating our war policy. What we should do, when we should fight, when not to fight. I'll read them again. Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the UAE, Turkey, you know, headed up by the Jew hater, remember him? Turkey and Pakistan. As well as Iran, and who knows what other countries whose national interests rarely, if ever, intersect. Lee Smith says, but in this case, there's almost no daylight between those U.S. allies and our adversaries because they share the belief that Trump doesn't have what it takes to break Iran's will. He goes on and talks about Hamas and how that they've got some motivation now to negotiate and to talk about disarmament because the money's flowing out from D.C. The billions and billions are going to flow into Hamas just like they will into Iran if Iran agrees to some sham peace deal. So it pays to talk. American diplomats are really impressed by talk, by dialogue. They think the world problems can be solved by dialogue. They feel like the world can become a stable environment if we just talk to each other, if we just have a little bit of dialogue. Hamas now sees an opportunity to get its cut of the pie. The president is serving all its friends. These are President Trump's new friends. These are America's new friends. Hamas, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Turkey. And it could be Iran if they would just negotiate. If they'd just sit down and talk. Trump knows that Hamas has no intention of disarming. He's regularly threatened them, too. And when they ignored his social media, jeremiads, they paid no price. It's just bluster. It's just all talk. That's all that it amounts to. Dialogue. And then back to the battlefield. It says, it's because nothing is working right now. Not negotiations, not proportional strikes that fail to achieve strategic objectives like winning the straight back and destroying Iran's nuclear program, that the administration is looking for wins in the communication space. Because in the real world, it looks like America is losing. Did you hear this? They've got to get victories in the communication space because in the real world, America's losing. And be assured that the real world is watching and sees this. So if Trump can't win the war or won't, he can win a peace by pocketing Hamas's non-concessions to pad his resume as a deal maker. Indeed, the president of peace, as UN Ambassador Mike Wallace described, the commander-in-chief now determined, like the loser presidents who preceded him, to waste American time, prestige, and money on a credible political path that achieves self-determination and statehood for the Palestinian terror enclave. Give him a state. Give him billions. October 7 is ancient history. You had a Hamas. There's another story in my stack. Hamas officials that are out there still praising what they were able to do on October 7th. They love it. They love killing them some Jews. Oh, they love that sort of thing. They love raping Jewish women. They love burning little Jewish babies. And we love giving them money. And we love putting Israel's arm behind its back, handcuffing Israel. And we love ceasefires. Was there any kind of ceasefire on October 7? Did they get halfway through the raping and the burning and the pillaging and then say, hang on a second, let's go to the negotiation table. Israel's got a deal. Israel's got a deal for us to stop the carnage. Let's sit down and talk. Do they think this way? Iran is openly, blatantly mocking the United States in our war strategy, on again, off again, on again, off again. White House messaging tells adversaries and allies alike that the Pax Americana is a broken reed. Sure, the Americans once protected the strait against a nuclear superpower for decades, but under Trump, America's patrimony or property is up for grabs. You look at his conclusion here, and it's a pretty sobering message. Lee Smith is spot on. He's showing some courage, by the way, because this is not a popular message. He's been on this program before, as you know. He's, I think, the best that Tablet has to offer at their website. Leaks from Trump officials that plans to take the strait by force are complicated by the lack of interceptors. Tell American adversaries little about our stockpiles. They haven't already counted. Further on, it says Trump can't say how these ghoulish puppet shows with Iran and its proxies augment America's wealth and glory, because they don't. Rather, they make America complicit with monsters. Is that how we want this to go down? America being complicit with monsters? Melanie Phillips has written along these lines, too. She's shown some courage. They put us in the same room as Hamas, whose cruelty, Trump said less than a year ago, struck to the core of humanity itself. He vowed then that America stands with Israel under the motto, never again. But now he's leaning on a wartime ally to play along with phony deals he struck with Hamas and Hezbollah that deter Israel while shielding the terrorists on its borders. These aren't the acts of a president of peace. Never mind a commander-in-chief who understands the nature of America's peace and the character of our adversaries who want to break it. These are not acts of peace. These are acts that are just going to ensure that we have more war and rumors of wars, of a world of instability. That's what your Bible prophesies. Read Matthew 24 and Luke 21. It's all there. The sure word of Bible prophecy. Herbert Armstrong used to talk about how the Bible's divided into thirds, basically. You've got a third that is prophecy. You've got a third that is history. Those lessons, the sin cycle, the Groundhog Day that Israel went through repeatedly. And then you've got the third that is instruction from God. Or sometimes we say Christian living, how we're supposed to live. Bible teaching, that is our foundation. And throughout that book, God has a law that reemerges over and over again. It's the law of cause and effect. Or you could describe it as blessings and cursings. Blessings for obedience, cursings for disobedience. The lessons are there. God presented our first parents, Adam and Eve, with this towering concept. He said in Genesis 2, verse 16, "And the Lord God commanded Adam and Eve, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat of it, for in the day that you eat thereof you shall surely die." And you know what happened here. Adam and Eve decided, well, I don't agree with God. I'm going to try the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. I'm going to go my way. And they went their way under the sway and influence of the devil. It's right there in the first six verses of Genesis 3. And that's been the way of this world ever since. We leave God out of the picture. We ignore God. We forsake God. Even when he was leading us previously, we forsake him. We decide that we can figure this out on our own. We don't need God. Leviticus 26 and verse 3, it says, "If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them," well, read the rest of the chapter. It's a long chapter. If, notice that huge little word if, if you walk in my statutes, if you keep my commandments, then what? Blessings. And then you get down to, what, I don't know the verse offhand, verses 14, 15, 16. If you don't obey, then what? Then curses. Curses will set in. You can go back earlier and see in Exodus chapter 20, Exodus 21, 22, 23, God, he founds the nation of Israel, and then he gives them the law and judgments and statutes. Why? He founded this great nation. So he founded it. And again, just to come back to the foundation analogy, he gave them the law of God. That was to be the foundation for a strong, stable, secure society or nation. But what did they do? Skip ahead to Deuteronomy 28, verse 1. It shall come to pass. This is the companion chapter to Leviticus 26. It shall come to pass if you shall hearken diligently unto the voice of the Lord your God to observe and to do all his commandments, which I command you this day, that the Lord your God will set you on high above all nations of the earth. If you keep the commandments, remember. And all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you if you shall hearken unto the voice of the Lord your God. All these blessings, you're just going to be overwhelmed with blessings when you obey God. Now, our nation is clearly not doing that today, but you can do it individually. Who wouldn't like to be overwhelmed by blessings? I wouldn't mind more of those. I feel like I'm fabulously blessed as it is. I mentioned the camp and the campus and all the activities that go on right here on these grounds. It's magnificent. It's wonderful. God, the thing of it is, God wants to bless you. He wants to give you prosperity and strength and peace and contentment. Read Matthew 6:33. It says, seek you first the kingdom of God. Okay, that's God's kingdom, that's spiritual, and his righteousness, here again, that's spiritual, and all these things, that's physical, will be added unto you. Not that that's the ultimate objective here, to just get physical things. We want to be in God's kingdom. We want to become God. We want to be married to Christ. That's the ultimate reward. But the things are a part of the package. It's incredible. Jesus said, I come to this earth to give you the abundant life. John 10 and verse 10. I am come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. God's way of life, even in the physical realm, with its tests and trials and injuries and obstacles and sicknesses, even in that, you can be richly blessed with greater faith, deeper love for God and his way of life, his commandments, stronger character. Look at the fruits of God's Spirit in Galatians 5. You can be lying on your deathbed and still be growing in love and joy and peace and goodness and faith and temperance, all those fruits of the Spirit. Long suffering. Sometimes you do have to suffer long. But look at what Jesus did. Look at what the first century apostles went through. All except for John, they were martyred. That was a painful end to a physical existence that lasted for what? In Jesus' case, 33 years? That's not very long. The apostles maybe lived a little bit longer. 60, 70 years, and then martyred. But the thing of it is, they're going to live in God's kingdom, in God's family, forever and ever, when they're resurrected from the dead, at the return of Jesus Christ. That's coming soon. They are going to live as glorified, brilliant, all-powerful God beings for eternity. And the territory that they're going to be presiding over is the universe. Talk about being blessed for obedience. There is no greater blessing than that. You can see why Paul said to the Colossians in chapter 3, verse 2, set your mind on the things above. Get your mind on God's kingdom and God's righteousness, and then let God take care of so many of the things. That's not to say that we shouldn't strive to be productive and fruitful, even in the job that we have or in being a provider. Of course we do those things, and we do plan. And we do think about a five-year plan and what we can do for our family and how we can grow the business or whatever it is. But the essence of the first commandment is to put God and the things of God first. And if you do that, well, then you can be sure that God will be doing and leading the building with you. And that what you're doing, what you're striving for, what you're aiming for won't be in vain. We've got a few minutes left for World Watch, today's Friday episode or segment of World Watch. We'll play that here to conclude today's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We appreciate you joining us all week. And we'll see you next time.
Jews outside of Israel face the most persecution in Germany. According to a report released July 29th by the J7 Large Communities Task Force Against Antisemitism, the organization represents the major Jewish communities across seven nations where 90% of the Jews outside Israel live: Australia, Germany, Argentina, Britain, Canada, France, and the United States. There were more than 23,000 anti-Semitic incidents across the seven countries in 2025, compared to 9,800 recorded incidents in 2022. Germany ranked number one in anti-Semitic incidents, recording 8,725 cases in 2025, more than three times as many as in 2022. The J7 Task Force said, "Anti-Semitism in our seven countries is no longer a surge. It is our new normal." While 807 cases in Germany are attributed to right-wing extremism, 501 to left-wing extremism, and 166 to an Islamic background, most of the other cases don't have an identified political background. Anti-Semitism is rising worldwide, but especially in Europe. To learn why this trend is so concerning, read Truth and Lies About Anti-Semitism. Liechtenstein, one of the world's smallest, wealthiest per capita countries, suffered a major cyber attack last week. Its government announced over the weekend that the attack from Wednesday into Thursday compromised the data of around 31,000 people in Liechtenstein's register of beneficial owners. The government maintains these lists to combat money laundering and terrorist financing, but hackers and others can use them for extortion and manipulation. Also on Thursday, the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Environmental Protection Agency in the U.S. issued a joint warning that cyber attacks are targeting U.S. infrastructure. Attacks on internet-connected programmable logic controllers used by water and wastewater utilities have caused pressure loss, flooding, and other disruptions. While damage was minor, the hacks reveal another vulnerability hackers can target. While all nations are at risk, the U.S. superpower especially has put great trust in technology. But what if its greatest strength suddenly become its greatest vulnerability? To learn more, read America's Achilles Heel and Germany. In its five-year fight against Russia, Ukraine is not only scoring victories against one of the world's most powerful militaries, but also accomplishing military innovations that outmatch even those of the U.S. Travis Metz, who oversees the Pentagon's drone dominance program, told Reuters on July 27th that the U.S. is unable to match Ukraine's drone production. Ukraine will have produced more than 6 million small first-person view attack drones by the end of the year. Meanwhile, the Pentagon plans to order just under 200,000 drones by February 2027. Most U.S. drones currently rely on Chinese-made motors, batteries, and other small parts. Shifting to all-American manufacturers is obviously desirable, but it will be challenging and expensive. Also, Ukraine claims to have hacked Russia's own defense system to shoot down Russia's high-tech Su-57 stealth fighters. Using an enemy's weapons system against it opens a new world of opportunities. As The Telegraph wrote, if true, it would represent one of the most audacious intelligence coups of the war. The modern battlefield is changing rapidly. To understand more about how the Ukraine war is preparing other nations for the wars of the future, read Germany Learns Faster from the Ukraine War Than Russia Does. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.